Mr. Connor is a registered representative and managing principal with Connor Wealth Management. Securities offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC. Opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, its guests, and callers, and not those of WLVL, its management, staff, or sponsors. Nothing contained in this program should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security, and if applicable, only after the prospectus has been read and understood by the customer. These decisions can only be made after consideration of an investor's investment objective and the investment suitability.
And good morning. It is Friday, May 20th. And, of course, we are here with Eric Connor from Connor Wealth Management, talking all things money. If you have any questions, you can feel free to call 433-1433. If you do not get through to that, you can feel free to text me at 548-6434 with your questions, comments, thoughts, or concerns. That's 548-6434 for texting Eric Connor. So, good morning, Mr. Connor. How the heck are you?
I'm great. I'm in the studio with like 64 seconds to spare. So
I'm thinking 44, but I'll grant you the 64 if you want.
Man, some days are better than other with me showing up at least 10 minutes early, and then there's the days I walk in and the door isn't even shut and the intro is playing. Sorry about that.
It's fine. It's always interesting on Fridays to see when you're going to come popping through the door.
I know. The one day I showed up at like 7 minutes to 10.
And
John saw me walk in and he was like, what are you doing here so early? I'm like, come on, it's not that bad. He's like, dude, you're never here early. So
yeah, I thought maybe you were bringing breakfast or something that day, but nah.
Oh, well. You'd think I was that generous and thoughtful, but no, I didn't really think of it then either. I should show up with donuts and muffins, though. That would be kind of me.
It would be kind, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, no, I got to give credit where credit is due because you are one of the judges for the meatloaf off. And if we ever have our chili off, you're going to be one of the judges for that as well here at WLVL. So I got to give you credit for coming in at the butt crack of dawn to do that. So that was good.
If we go the chili route, that'll be a lot easier, I think, than the meatloaf, just because of how we can sample that, hopefully out of like crock pots. And
yeah, it'll be hot already.
Yeah, we'll just need to disguise which chili we're eating so that people can rank it unbiasedly.
Yeah, it's a difficult task, but I know that you are up to it. And you are up to a lot of other difficult tasks here this week, too, trying to figure out and explain in layman's terms to me what in tarnation is going on with the world of finance. It seems like it's been on a heck of a roller coaster this week.
Yeah, my heavens. We closed out April with me being here 2 weeks. I was here the last week of April and then the first week of May.
Right.
And it was kind of convenient to be here 2 weeks in a row.
It was.
Because we had some upheaval. And when we signed off 2 weeks ago, we kind of made the comment of like, well, we'll see how it goes over the next 2 weeks. And it certainly has been a series of headlines and news items and sort of lurching back and forth in the market. Ultimately, we look like we're headed for an up day today, but a losing week. And if we have that losing week, CNBC tells me that it would be the eighth straight losing week. And we have done that approximately, because I don't know that this is absolute fact, but apparently we've done that four previous times since World War II. So that would tell you that kind of the trending lower over and over and over doesn't really happen too much. And so if we put it in perspective a little bit, corrections aren't commonly known as a 10% decline in the market, and bear markets are 20% or more. And for all of the upheaval and sort of bad headline, bad chyrons, I think are what they're called when it's down at the bottom of the television screen, the S&P 500 has not gone into a bear market. We have not corrected 20% on that side. But I would say there is a big, giant asterisk about that. Because if you look at the NASDAQ and some of the biggest names that we know, they certainly have corrected 20% or more. And so that would be things like Amazon and NVIDIA. They've moved a lot. And so the news of this week, if I could boil it down for a second to not get into the minutiae of everything that we could dig into, I would say the one thing to pull away from this week is the interesting retail earnings news, because within the week we've had Walmart report earnings, we've had Target report earnings, and for the economy, retail sales continue to be up. They continue to be strong. What these earnings reports showed is that sort of like Amazon from a month ago or whenever that was. It seems like it was a month ago already. It's companies that are having a little bit of trouble controlling their costs, which I would say is totally to be expected, right? We're in a inflation period and companies are worried about shipping and delivery and they're trying to gather up their supply. So it would be hard for them to manage their costs a little bit. And so in that setup, their sales have been up. They couldn't quite hit their earnings numbers. And what a weaker market will show you is exactly what happened with Walmart and Target this week. Big companies, no fear of failure, and yet they got taken out to the woodshed.
Yeah.
And pummeled, right? Like Wednesday, I think it was, for Target,
yeah,
down 25%.
Yeah, they got hit in the knees, man.
Walmart, let's say back in February, I don't have the chart in front of me, they were up in that 150 range. I don't quite know where they were in like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. Again, I don't have the chart in front of me. They've trended lower, and after their earnings, they're now at about 115. Right. So you're talking more than 20% in that window of time for Walmart. Again, you have no fear of these companies just bumbling their way into bankruptcy or anything like that. But in a tougher market where confidence matters and quality matters, they showed some weakness in those earnings and the market pummeled them in that moment. And that's a great snapshot, because we know year to date, we know that the NASDAQ has had some of the bigger declines, right? I talk about NVIDIA, where a high quality company, and yet it's down almost 50% from its 52 week high because it had a very rich valuation, meaning it's price to earnings multiple was up around 60 or 65 times, something like that, 70, I don't know. And so now it's down almost 50%. I think its PE falls in line now around the upper 30s. That makes sort of perfect sense when you've got the environment we have, which is rising interest rates. You're going to have those high valuation companies correct lower. But again, the interesting thing to pull away from this week is on things that aren't as highly valued, but focus on a bit of the retail sector. And if you disappoint in a weak market, you will have your stock price take a hit. And so we've seen it again this week on Target, Walmart, some other ones too, Bed Bath & Beyond. Today there's a company called Ross Stores, which is kind of like a bit of like TJ Maxx on the focus on some discounted clothing and items, not on high-end fashion. They disappointed after the close yesterday, and they are getting hit today with a decline. Again, it's not that their sales and revenue were terrible. It's that they weren't quite controlling their costs, and therefore their profits weren't quite where they looked to be expected. And so the market does not reward that, especially when it's got other reasons to worry. And so that's having a pretty good decline today as well.
Indeed. Yes. And so I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but people are still twitchy about the supply. You know, Shanghai is still shut down. They had a bunch of ships over there. I actually went on a website and saw all of the ships in their port. There's thousands of them. And then they got a lot of them loaded out and over here. But they're just afraid that once they empty them at our ports, when they go back, there's nothing to fill them up with again. And the rising cost of fuel to get those ships from here to there.
Yeah, the cost on the fuel side, just kind of like a FYI, it's reasonable as long as that ship is full and right. As long as it's round tripping when it makes its return trip, as long as it's reasonably full going back. The currently inflated cost of the fuel, it balances out fairly well. As long as it's full. Now, your point is fairly well taken with once a ship finally gets here and it needs to head back over to China or Vietnam or Malaysia or the Philippines or wherever,
right.
Is it leaving with American goods so that that trip becomes economical? Because, yeah, if a big giant container ship's just traveling across the ocean empty, that is not a very economical solution. No. Now, in that respect, that's totally on the shipping companies and the work they do, and you know, whether they can fill the cargo is kind of up to them. And it doesn't hurt the normal names of what we might expect. Like if a container ship goes back to Asia and is empty, that does not affect the Walmart, Target. It's not affecting the retail stores in that way. It actually impairs just the shipping company. Sure. So, okay. They are publicly traded. They're not very widely owned by what we would call retail consumers, right? Like rarely do we ever have an interest in the shippers. Occasionally, they can sometimes be a nice spot to own and get some yield out of them, some income out of them. But kind of as a long-term hold, they are not very interesting to just sit there. Over the years, there's been a lot of boom and bust cycles in shipping and occasional bankruptcies. So, you know, we'd reasonably stay away from that sort of business. You know, uh-huh. if it's almost a coin flip that over the years you might reach bankruptcy, we probably aren't too interested investing perspective.
No, I can lose money in lots of other ways than that.
Yeah, that's right. It's easy enough to just make a questionable purchase decision.
That's right.
Having it just run itself into the ground or into the water in this case,
yes,
not very enticing. So the supply point, I don't know. We hear so many things anecdotally, whether it's about appliances or furniture, and of course, you know, just normal electronics are sort of always of interest to people. It seems to be just very sporadic and very hit or miss as to whether there's an actual problem or not for most of those products. Where it really does seem to exist with not a great solution continues to be on some of the autos. You know, some of the products that come as imports from Asia, the lead times, if you were to be interested in a new car, they're very long and open-ended, right? So if you went in and wanted a new Hyundai or a Kia, you might be told, well, you could order it, and yeah, we can talk about the price, but the actual delivery date, we know it won't be sooner than perhaps 4 months, but it could be a lot longer. And I would comment, as someone who's currently looking for a vehicle within my household, that's a pretty challenging window to try to figure out how to look at all of the vehicles that are out there and sort through the items that are or aren't there. Because one of the things that's impacted with the semiconductor shortage are things that do some of the little bells and whistles that become a little more important as you get a little older. And so I've become very fond of a heated steering wheel.
Yes.
And that's one of the real simple semiconductors that they need. And it's one of the real simple semiconductors that they do not have.
That's right. Yes.
And so, you know, if you're going to look to buy a car, and I'll just say in the 30,000 and up category, and it's kind of important that your hands aren't freezing cold. And in my case, that's sort of how it is. I don't love having cold fingers on a steering wheel. It's a bit of a challenge. That puts you in a bit of a pickle because the cars that seem to be around that we might that might work for my family with the requirements we have, they don't seem to be in stock with that option right now. So, That's sort of a personal comment on the supply chain seems to be that it's definitely impacting car sales, which we've talked about. And for certain people in certain areas of the country, you know, you can do a trade-off to a different vehicle really easy, right? Like if I lived in Florida and wanted a heating steering wheel, that would be sort of ridiculous, right? Mother Nature heats my steering wheel just fine if I'm sitting there in Sarasota or West Palm or wherever. But up in the Northeast and the Midwest, you know, cold weather options like that kind of matter. So
they do. They're important.
And so if you have no trading ability, right, no trade-off ability, you are just sort of stuck in that scenario. So we'll see. We'll see how it all goes. I know that I hear anecdotally through some clients that would be in the know, that there are still challenges on some building materials, not necessarily imported at all, but there's still challenges on a domestic basis for some building materials, orders that get delayed and then delivered, and I'll say custom orders, and then when they show up, they've been wrong. That's a really big challenge.
That's a big problem.
If you've been waiting for a custom order and the custom order is wrong, you've got a real delay. And so I've heard of that on a couple of items that are going into new builds. And I'm sure it would exist for people that are simply just trying to remodel as well, right, depending on what kind of remodel they're doing. We just had to have a new boiler put in the house. Love to have a heating repair right at the end of heating season. And that was just a little delayed. It wasn't that we had to wait for it to come from overseas, but it was not immediately available. So that only took a couple of extra weeks to be able to get that product into our house. So, yeah, I think it's a mixed bag, really, is what it comes down to, Eric. I think some of the comments would be that it's shipping from overseas, and I would say that there's definitely still a manpower issue in this country. The statistics I did just see is that the current job openings are at about 11.5 million. I think it was 11.6. And then I saw the incredible unemployment number, I believe this was 2 days ago, and it said that the continuing unemployment number is only like 1.5 million in the country, which just seems incredibly small.
It does. So people just aren't looking for jobs.
Right. You've got a category of people that just are not looking. Right. And so you've got when people continue to get aggravated on the inflation side of things, I've sort of spoken about different ways to look at inflation here because, first of all, it's worldwide. It's not just American. But one of the biggest issues that you've got are that companies are in tons of industries are very interested in getting people into positions, and there are not people for them to hire. And so the solution for them is to offer more money to attract people, even if they're stealing it from another business, right? Like they're – if they need an operations person or they need a production supervisor, they might need to entice them to come from another area. So that trickle-down effect, like we've talked about for a very long time, that trickle-down effect goes all the way down to the help wanted signs on Transit Road because right. The workers are needed. across industries, across skill levels, and until we achieve some level of balance between the workforce, the available workforce, meaning people looking for jobs, and the number of job openings, you're going to continue to have upward pressure on wages, and those upward wage pressure issues trickle right over into the final cost of the goods and services being offered.
Right. Bottom line, it's always the consumer that's going to absorb that.
Exactly. You can have a business that might be willing to take, in the short term, might be willing to take a little profit hit. But over the longer run, they will find a way to raise their price, again, whether it's for a good or a service, whether whether it's a related to a car purchase or whether it's related to a medical visit, whether it's you want a hot dog at your local restaurant. It will eventually result in higher prices. Right. Absolutely.
And I can relate to that in personal level, you know, with the music store I owned, you know, guitar strings. The price just kept going up and up and up from my end, and I didn't raise my price on the retail end of it for years, until finally I had to, because the cost benefit was at zero. So then I had a decent hike, and it was like a 17% hike in price. So that was enough to absorb the next price increase that came along. And then I was talking to a pizza shop owner. She says, I don't like to raise my prices anywhere than I have to. So when I do, it's a big price increase.
Yeah.
And, because the cost of mozzarella doubled. The cost of pepperoni went up. The cost of chicken, which we want to talk about that. You know, so she had to have a massive price increase just to stay in business. You know, and the consumer says, well, for crying out loud, I'm paying $17 for a dozen wings. Yes, you are, because I'm paying $48 for a bag of wings I used to pay $24 for.
And for them, there's also no consistency from their supplier.
Right.
Right. So the price, even on the restaurant side, the price they paid for the cheese or for the wings one week, it may not be the same price the next week. And, when it comes to sort of the base products, you would not expect to be concerned week to week that those prices would go up. But that is sort of the scourge of the way inflation works, which becomes sort of a never ending cycle of it. And, again, you've got it all around the world. I heard this morning that Japan, for the first time in years, actually had inflation above the Bank of Japan's target. And for anyone who sort of knows the Japanese history of their stock market and their currency and their inflation / deflation cycle, it's been 30 plus years that they've been trying to get some inflation into their economy, and they've not really succeeded in that entire time. I mean, there have been a couple of moments, you know, 6 months here, 9 months there, where they've gotten some inflation, but they've been very, very challenged for most of all of the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s to find some inflation to actually lift their economy up a little bit. So you sort of think of them in the doldrums over the years, right? They enjoy a high standard of living and quality of life is high, but for them as an aging economy and country, it's been very hard to find economic growth and inflation. And you can sort of see how it just eventually is like a wave going out. So for years after the housing crisis, countries have taken on debt and spent money, and eventually it will create some adverse effects. And in our case, as the pandemic hit, that became the real jolt of additional supply mixed with the problem of manpower. And so that's become sort of the worldwide scenario of whether it's ships over in China that just can't leave port, or companies that just can't get people in to process chickens. And so one of the shortages during the pandemic wasn't chickens per se, it was the manpower to process the chicken.
Right.
And
yeah,
so
the chickens in the world, doesn't matter if you can't process them.
Correct. And we remember the headlines a year ago about the price of lumber. Well, you know, I sort of made the comment, there's no shortage of trees. That's not our problem. The problem is actually having the workers in the lumber mills to create the finished product to go into housing and whatever else we're looking for. So that's sort of really been the magic button that got pushed in terms of creating this inflationary spot we're in that hadn't been around for a very, very long time. So just creating money like we've done for years, that doesn't create inflation until people start actually spending it. There's a term known as the velocity of money. Mm-hmm. So if you print a lot of money and people just shove it in their pocket, that doesn't create inflation. Yeah. It's once they want to start using it. And so you can sort of work your way through all of this and know that because retail sales are high and demand is high, all of that demand is what's pulling along the price increases. And it works on the way, again, on salaries for workers, and it creates the slowdowns in ports. And mixed in with a pandemic, that creates a workforce problem. And that's the magical little cycle that we're in the moment. And so it'll take time. And on the American economy side, the Fed's raising rates to combat inflation. We've talked about it. They've forecast the idea that they're going to raise rates half a percentage point multiple times this year. The next meeting, I think, is in the very early part of June. And ultimately, they're going to try to raise interest rates to dampen some of the demand that's out there. And the big unknown will be, can they raise rates enough but not too much so that they dampen the inflation demand, wreck some of the demand in the economy, but don't raise rates so much that it tips us into a recession.
Right. Now, and a couple questions for you.
That's the magic side.
It is. Now, home sales are down right now. Is it because of supply issues or is it because of the interest issues?
Yeah, so it's a good question, and it's a little bit of both. So we still have way too little supply, just way too little supply. I think a couple of shows ago we had some of the data that talked about how many homes were for sale and how many are being built.
Right.
It's way lower than it used to be. But
the demand is...
So in the moment, because of that short supply and because mortgage rates did move higher, and they're right now about 5.25% on a 30-year. What it did is it removed just enough people from the home purchasing market for the few homes that are available. So we hit a little bit of a soft spot, but I would say that if there were more homes for sale and there were more home choices because of that, I think it probably wouldn't look as big. I think that number that came in was something like down 12.5% on a monthly year over year for April.
Right.
But again, keep in mind, like last April was booming and on home sales. And so when you then move forward 12 months and say, well, interest rates went up 2% on that 30-year mortgage and there's still not a lot of supply, a huge percentage of sales are being done on a cash basis, but you don't keep buying another new home for cash. If you traded up 2 years ago and you're pretty happy, you're not going to just swap out of that home again until you feel like you're getting a really good deal. So a lot of the pandemic moves have been done, and I mean literal moves, from one area of the country to another, and the cash buyers, which have, there's no problem with a mortgage rate if you just own your house outright. They're not going to just go in and out of markets willy-nilly just because. So I think that's kind of a two-part answer, is that there's still very low relative supply of homes for sale, and then the little adjustment that relates to mortgages, right? So rates have moved up a pretty good amount, but in terms of the big scheme of who's looking for homes, I think it's only a little bit of a dent in that overall picture. So what I would sort of suspect to happen into the months ahead, and you know, you could look out 6 months or 9 months or 12 months, I think we will start seeing a little more supply of homes on the market. I think if we were to have the Fed go too far and start looking at an economy where there were more layoffs and creating a weakening cycle, that's when some people put more homes up for sale. You know, if you've lost your job, if you lost your job and are getting repositioned to a different area, suddenly more supply comes into the market. And that would be for the consumer that wants or needs to make a change, that would be a more desirable situation for them at that point.
Indeed. Well, for those of you who may be just joining us, we have Eric Connor from Connor Wealth Management, talking all things wealth, of course. And, of course, Connor Wealth Management is located at 5860 Snyder Drive and ConnorWealthManagement.com. You can check out his website there. If you'd like to make an appointment with Mr. Connor, which is strongly recommended as he is a busy, busy guy and not always in the office, give his office a call at 439-1143. That's 439-1143 to make an appointment with Mr. Connor to see what condition your condition is in. Now, you can try calling us if you have any questions at 433-1433. If that doesn't work, you can use the WLVL text line at 548-6434. That's 548-6434 with any questions, comments, thoughts, or concerns you may have that Mr. Connor could address for us. And you kind of caught my attention earlier. You said a correction is at 10%. A bear market is at 20%. What's a recession?
So the recession doesn't relate to the stock market. And the recession is negative gross domestic product movement, a decline in GDP for two calendar quarters in a row. So, you know, you can sort of navigate that as saying negative growth for more than six months or more.
Okay.
The interesting part, if you had the opportunity to see one of the economic charts that get created from time to time, and it'll show usually they'll do the S&P 500. They'll show a long-term chart of the S&P 500, and they will gray in the periods of when the U.S. economy was actually in a recession. And what'll frequently happen over the years, first of all, is that you'll see that there aren't nearly as many recessions as you might think. It's not super common in the big scheme of things, and they're less common as time goes on. But also that the market often moves lower ahead of the recession, before the recession actually has been declared, and that often the market bottoms while you're still in a recession and starts rebounding before the recession ends. And so you could sort of take that and make a prediction, and I don't know that I'm making this prediction right now, but you could make a bit of a prediction right now that the market here is anticipating a recession late this year, early next year, on the belief that the Fed will probably induce a recession because of their interest rate increases.
Right, so the confidence there is a little questionable, huh?
Yeah, it's not. I would say at this point, it looks more like a coin flip, right? Kind of a 50-50 kind of outcome. Certainly, what the Fed absolutely needs to do is slow the economic growth that we have to reduce the demand, right? That's how you'll lower inflation, is to rid the economy of some of the demand. Then the second part becomes, do they meet their goal of doing it without pushing us into a recession, or do we end up in a recession? And so what I say to clients, and it's not always the most easy to process type of thing, is a recession does not mean that the market tumbles, right? This idea that because we've lived through the dot-com bust and the housing crisis and now the pandemic problem of 2 years ago, those were real market events. And they came from spots with reasonably high valuations, right? The dot-com bust happened because things that just had an interesting sock puppet went to a really high valuation, even though 6 months later I can't even think of what that company was at this point. It was bankrupt, 6 months after spending millions for a Super Bowl commercial. So the dot-com era was interesting because the average company, like a utility and a bank and an insurance company, they did not crumble from the dot-com bust. It truly was a tech problem in that era, and right. The NASDAQ went down, I think, 80% from its peak. But the Dow did not have any kind of trouble like that. So the idea of recessions do not necessarily mean calamity of any kind in the stock market. The trouble the market's got right now is that adjustment period because we've gone from incredibly low inflation to a much higher amount of inflation.
Great. We have a call. You want to take it?
Great. Let's go.
Good morning, caller. You are on with Eric Connor, Connor Wealth Management.
I only have one question. I'm going to ask my question. I'll take my answer off the air. They're talking about raising the interest rates two more times. Is that just a scare tactic, or is that what's going to happen? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call.
So the Fed has sort of an interesting way that they navigate their communication. So they'll have their official meetings every 6 weeks, but then there will also be times when different members of the board of governors do speeches. And so the speeches sometimes are as illuminating as their official meeting notes. So what they've basically come out, and I'll just summarize it, is that they've implied that the meetings this year will look to have 50 basis point increases, and that it's with the idea of dampening inflation and ridding the economy of some of the extra demand that they view is there, right? There's still a lot of dollars chasing these goods. So they moved a quarter of a point in March. They moved half a point, I think it was already 2 weeks ago. Jeepers. And that there's certainly that their words have been that they are looking to move higher in at least the next couple meetings and possibly every meeting this year. And so I know a couple of shows ago I said I have a bit of a hard time believing they're going to get to where they move half a interest rate point each time for six meetings in a row. That doesn't mean it can't happen. I just in this moment,
I remember that conversation.
In this moment, I just sort of feel, yeah, that might be a little too much. But I think there's an expression, it's baked in the cake. I think it's baked in the cake that the next two meetings, they are still going to be moving 50 basis points. And so the 10-year bond is at about 2.8, 2.85 right now. It was already above 3. So we've already lost a little bit there. So they're only affecting the shortest end of the yield curve, not the 10-year directly, not the 30-year directly. And so I think what I would sort of predict is they will move ahead. They'll move these things higher at each of the next two with probably little doubt, but, could always have a curveball thrown. And that'll result in a little bit of interest getting paid on our bank accounts, and it'll probably move CD rates up a little bit. It'll also have credit card rates move a little higher because of the way they're calculated. It will probably move mortgage rates a little bit higher as well. We'll have to see how much. But I think if they can move the short-term rate another percent by the end of summer, I think we're probably having mortgage rates probably take on at least half of that gain. So instead of 5.25, maybe they'd be at 5.5 or 5.75. And I think that would create a fairly good dampening on the housing market. Again, It has nothing to do with going from growth in the market to suddenly talking calamity in the market. Mm-hmm. We're not thinking that we're going to end up with some sort of housing crash. But higher mortgage rates will dampen the rate of gain in any prices, right? Because it's more expensive to take on the mortgage at that point. So the trickle effect of those costs become that a car loan will be higher cost, that mortgages will be higher cost, that credit card debt will be higher cost, right? Anything that you're taking on as a liability will get more expensive, and the belief is that will lower some of the demand within the purchasing side of the economy. So that's sort of the give and take. For the average company out there, you know, if they're refinancing their debt, they're going to end up having to pay, depending on what they're refinancing. But if it's been something really short term, they were at really low rates. You know, if they've got something that was an older debt security coming due, maybe they were hoping that they would have been able to renew it somehow at a much lower rate, and that looks like it's not going to happen for them. But, you know, so the average company's got to manage a lot of costs. Part of it is the debt on their balance sheet. New projects will be more expensive for them, whether it's construction or expansion or whatever they might be doing. And then the other thing that I talk about is as rates increase, there's a readjustment in the valuation of stock prices. And again, it impacts the high growth stocks the most. And that's why we've seen the NASDAQ correct more than we've seen out of the average stock in, say, the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average so far.
Understood. So now, as you are servicing your clientele, I'm getting the impression that the turtle's going to win the race here, right?
I think that's true. I think that's true right now. Yeah. If you're rolling the dice and going for broke, you are in a very dangerous kind of market right now. That's right.
Right. And so when you come in and you give the advice to your folks and how to maintain their wealth, you know, as this roller coaster ride that we're going on, it must be challenging. At some point or other points, are they very secure in the assets that they have? And of course, that all goes against the value of the dollar that we're spending now.
Yeah,
the dollar doesn't go quite as far as it did last week.
Right. So with the decline that we've had, and the one of the real challenges in portfolios this year, not just for my clients but for anyone, has been the decline on the bond side of the world. Right. Bonds are having, because of the interest rate increases, bonds are having just about their worst year ever. And I point out things like saying it's not because of bankruptcies. It's not because of defaults. It's the pricing that goes in, how pricing is negatively affected when interest rates rise. And so because we are at such low levels, these interest rate increases really do hurt the price of bonds. And so what we're doing with clients, and certainly clients that don't like to see declines. And so if you've even had a reasonably balanced portfolio of saying 50-50 or 40% stock and 60% bond, you've had declines because even on the bond side, they've had a rough year. And so what we do is we look at it and we look at where are the aggressive positions, where are the middle of the road positions, where are the conservative positions. And we look at where they've been, whether it's a year ago or 2 years ago, and we can say, like, yeah, we've had these declines, but that takes us back to where you were maybe May of last year or February of last year, and you were okay at that time. So we don't ever like to lose money. We don't like to have declines. But we do try to put it in perspective of saying, look, you were doing okay when we had this level of money in the past, and you're doing okay now. And, you know, we'll find ways to improve the risk balance in the account if that's what we need to do. And bond portfolios, we will do some exchanges so that we can take advantage of tax problems that have arisen because of the decline, so we can sort of make lemonade out of the lemons. And so it's a good conversation to have. And, you know, clients want to know that you're paying attention, They want to know that you have some sort of ideas, and they want to know that it's not the first time that you've ever seen a market correction, or that, to put it in perspective of where it fits into their grand scheme of things, if they're still on target to meet their goals, it's a lot easier to know that, yeah, the decline is 12%, but you're still on track to do everything you ever wanted to do. That's a good outcome, even if in the short term you've got a decline on the account statement.
Right. Just feel a little twitchy for a minute and see where it goes.
Yeah.
So listen, oops. So we have a minute left. Final thoughts.
Now, hang in there. Again, take a look at the portfolios that you might have. See how it fits. If there's a position that's making you nervous, talk to someone about it. Maybe that's one that you move away from. Make good choices. Same thing I say to my kids. Make good choices.
Make good decisions. All right, folks, listen, thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to Ask the Pro with Mr. Eric Conner from Conner Wealth Management. If you'd like to have an appointment with him to discuss your wealth management, call his office at 439-1143. That's 439-1143. And once again, thanks, Mr. Conner. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
I'll be back.
And we'll do it all again. Stick around for Fox News later here on WLVL.